The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back to the show. New York Times headline, news story. Retail chains abandon Manhattan. It's unsustainable. Some national chains, both retail and restaurants, are closing outlets in New York City, which are struggling more than their branches elsewhere. Indeed, for years, Bryant Park and Grill Cafe in Midtown Manhattan has been one of the country's top grossing restaurants. The star property in ARC Restaurants' portfolio of 20 restaurants across the United States. But what propelled it to the top has vanished. The tourists are gone, the office towers surrounding it are largely empty, and the restaurant's 1,000-seat dining room is closed. Instead, dinner is cooked and served on its patio, and the scaled-down restaurant brings in about $12,000 a day. That's an 85% plunge in revenue, according to the restaurant's CEO. In the heart of Manhattan, national chains including JCPenney, Kate Spade, Subway, and others have shuttered branches for good. Many other large brands like Victoria's Secret and The Gap have kept their high-profile locations closed in Manhattan while reopening in other states. And in point of fact, if you read a little bit further into the story, of ARC Restaurant's five Manhattan restaurants, only two have reopened, while its properties in Florida have expanded outdoor seating with tents and tables into their parking lots, serving almost as many guests as they had indoors. Oh, and of course, you can't have a New York Times story without pushing the narrative. While its properties in Florida, where the virus is far worse, writes the New York Times, have extended outdoor seating and so forth, where the virus is far worse. Shall we go to the death count? But I digress. You know, even the New York Times is unintentionally aiding the narrative they're trying to otherwise tamp down, that the combination of economic lockdown policies plus the tolerance of lawlessness on the streets of major cities is destroying those cities economically and in every culturally and in every other way. Let's not forget, New York City is up more than 30% in shootings and murders this year. In New York City, Chicago, Kansas City, Seattle, Portland, these are the cities that are driving the 25% increase in murders year over year in America. And so as we continue our assessment of the choice that Joe Biden made, or maybe it was Trump making it and Joe Biden just acquiesced, I don't know. One could make the argument. Kamala Harris recently on The View with Meghan McCain on whether or not the former California Attorney General supports defunding the police.
Are you for defunding the police?
How are you defining defund the police?
Well, I'm not for anything remotely for that, so I would ask the protesters the same thing. But I assume I assume it's removing police, and as Congresswoman Ilhan Omar said, bringing in a whole new way of governing and a law and order into a community. And my understanding, again, this is something that has just come into my understanding recently, is that you would not have police officers, like this Minneapolis City Councilwoman said, that I would be a place of privilege if someone broke into my home and I wanted to call the police.
So, again, we need to reimagine how we are achieving public safety in America. And to have cities where one-third of their entire budget is going to policing, but yet there is a dire need in those same cities for mental health resources, for resources going into public schools, resources going into job training and job creation. Come on, we have to be honest about this, that there is actually not a consensus around this, because if there were, we would actually see smarter distribution of resources in our country.
Mm-hmm. So reimagining, rethinking, redistribution of public safety resources, public health resources, that's all so much lawyerly lingo for openness to defunding the police. What does that mean? It means cutting the funding for police, shrinking the department, laying off personnel, replacing them with social workers, all the things you're seeing actually happen in places like Seattle, Minneapolis. There's no confusion here. There's just artifice. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by our friend Victor Davis Hanson, Martin and Illy Anderson, senior fellow at the Hoover Institution and author most recently of The Case for Trump, VDH. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You've written about the thin veneer of civilization at a recent piece, at least that I read at National Review. And it seems to me the New York Times is covering, is providing that thin veneer, and it's paper thin. And it's being pierced by the rhetoric of one Joe Biden vice presidential nominee, Kamala Harris.
Yeah, I don't think we need to take them very seriously in their latest incarnation. Joe Biden would have never, I mean, he wasn't for this. He's just writing what he feels from his basement with his poorly receptive antenna that he thinks now he's got to go defund the police hard left because what he watches on TV and what his handlers tell him. And Kamala Harris has been all over the map. She used to, as a Californian, I remember reading about her putting parents in jail for truancy. Maybe that was good or not, but she came to prominence as a minority hardcore law and order. Not that she really followed her rhetoric with action, but that's what she posed as. And what she's saying now is that basically she's making a calculated gamble that the inner city African-American vote, and to a lesser extent the Latino vote, will be for defunding the police because of shooting. I don't think that's true. I don't know if that issue is going to lose her support, but it could lose her 3 or 4 or 5 points, that ticket, if they go through with it. But more importantly, they think the swing voters in these purple states support that position, and that's why they're mouthing it. Either that or they're captive to their base. But when you look at the polls of both African Americans and independents and swing, that's not an issue that resonates well for them. So it's hard to know whether they're just obtuse or whether they have some internal polling, but it's not a winning issue to defund the police. Joe Biden doesn't know where he is, and she doesn't know who she is at any given cycle in the election.
So this was my question, right? Is since Kamala Harris has long ago abandoned thoughtfulness, restraint, even handedness in pursuit of political power, then why wouldn't she just reintroduce herself as the prosecutor Kamala Harris, the law and order, the person who did prosecute criminals, who did enforce the law? And so then they can ham and egg it because, you know, they've got the lawless anarchist Jacobin crowd. They need those swing voters in the suburbs who actually do believe in law and order, even though I agree with you, minorities in urban centers do as well.
Yeah, that would be the logical thing, but I don't think they're quite logical. I think that she feels that Joe Biden, for a variety of reasons, both his own mistakes in promising the gender and perhaps even the race beforehand of the VP selection, she believes that she's wedded to that base, and she wants to shed any suggestion or inference that she's a moderate, quote-unquote, African-American. She really wants to get to the base, and so to do that, she did that in the primary, but what I don't understand is when she went hard left and rebuked all of her entire position, she ended up with 2% of the vote. And I think that was largely because the more people saw her, the more they didn't like her, because she has an off-putting demeanor. She's arrogant. She has a weird kind of Hillary Clinton cackle that she breaks into. She's not a very winning personality. And the weird dynamic that's setting up, she was the one person, and then later Elizabeth Warren, that went after Biden in really personal and racial terms. And now Biden is, I think he's cognitively impaired. I don't think he'd be able to finish out 2 years. And I think that if she were to be vice president, if he were to win, she would be a catalyst for getting him out of there. And I think he must know that. She'd be almost like a bird of prey circling around him in the Oval Office.
When we come back, I want to pick up right there on Kamala Harris. You mentioned the race issue that she played against Joe Biden during the primary campaign. Also, the Me Too issue that she played against him that I guess is no longer a serious matter for her either. More with Victor Davis Hanson right after this.
Dan Proft Show on the Salem Radio Network.
Welcome back to the show. We're talking to Victor Davis Hanson. He is the Martin and Illy Anderson Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution, author most recently of The Case for Trump. And we were talking about sort of the intersection of Joe Biden's selection for vice president. That would be one, Kamala Harris, with policing, particularly in major urban centers. But also this, you remember from the Kavanaugh hearings, her pontification on behalf of Christine Blasey Ford when she said this.
There was a process by which Christine Blasey Ford, who literally had nothing to gain by coming forward, Rachel, nothing to gain. She had a perfect life. And she looked at the fact that this guy was being nominated and said, the American people have a right to know what I know. And she was treated like a criminal.
Victor Davis Hanson, I suppose you could say the same thing about Tara Reid at present, couldn't you?
You sure could. And Christine Blasey Ford did not have a perfect life. She had a history of depression, and she was an unhappy person. And when she finished that entire thing, she became sort of the heartthrob of the left. She did much better after the hearing than she did before. She became kind of a cultural icon to the left. That's just a preposterous what Harris said. Everywhere she goes, she alienates people. And the idea that she may be president after having an agenda and a candidacy that had no resonance at all in the Democratic primary is kind of scary, but that's the way the system works. And what we're talking about, we're just beating around the bush, what we're talking about, and you know better than I do, it's about 10 states, and it's a supposedly swing voter, because the rural vote in Michigan and Wisconsin, the small town vote in Pennsylvania, that will match the inner city vote in Pittsburgh or Milwaukee or Detroit. The thing will tip it one way or the other are these suburbs, and we don't know quite what they're thinking. We know that they are turned off by some of Trump's tweets and personality, but they're more aligned with his issues than they are with the Democrats. How that's going to work out will be dependent on the news cycle in the next 80 days.
Well, and again, Kamala Harris on this issue, this Me Too issue, the sexual harassment allegations against Joe Biden, generally speaking, before even Tara Reid came forward, she said, I believe the accusers, like was the mantra of Hillary Clinton and other radical feminists. I believe the accusers without question. And now what are we supposed to believe? She just, well, that was the primary, you know, these rape allegations, these accusations of sexual harassment, sometimes they're important, sometimes they're less important. You know, they go up and down the priority matrix. It's just, so there's the hypocrisy piece of it. And this is perhaps one of the reasons why she came off as badly as she did, why she underperformed based on the expectations coming in terms of what she looked like on paper versus what she looked like in practice. Because as the Trump campaign hit right out of the gate, she's a phony. I mean, it's just naked pursuit of power. But the question is, do people have sort of that feeling about politicians generally? So it's sort of a wash that she's a phony like so many other people are phonies.
I think that's a good point. I think when he made that decision, and I don't think he made it, as Handlers did, they put on the left side of the deficit column the fact that she's from California, that she brings no electoral college heft to the ticket at all. She turns off people. She's a phony. The Tara Reid thing was ridiculous because by all rules of leftist jurisprudence, she should be believed because there's no statute of limitations in their way of thinking and everybody has to be believed. But she just threw that out, as you pointed out. But on the other side, they thought, you know what, when we mentioned Karen Bass or we talked about Stacey Abrams, these people, these minor figures have all sorts of unvetted histories and they're not good as part of the BLM affiliation or Black Caucus. They're left wing and we don't know anything about them. So they thought, you know, this, at least all the dirt came out of her. And that's, I think, why they picked her. And Susan Rice was the only viable alternative. She's even more polarizing. She's never been elected anything. So I think that was the idea.
There's something else, though, too. Even if you, you know, get away with the hypocrisy of it, you know, there's issue positions that really haven't been vetted. And one of them is that she was, at least initially, a proponent of reparations.
I think she still is.
Right. And so yeah. How do you walk away from that? And you want to tell me how reparations is going to play with the white working class that Scranton Joe Biden is supposed to pull back into Democrat ranks in Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin? I mean, come on.
Yeah. But look what he's done. All of those issues that we heard from January to March, reparations, Medicare for everybody, health care for illegal aliens, New Green Deal, 70% tax rate, wealth tax, that was all rejected by the voters, first by the resurrection of Joe Biden and then the call for Michael Bloomberg to come in. So those hard left candidates had no resonance with their own party. And yet Joe Biden feels that to get the African-American vote and to get the Antifa sympathetic vote, he's got to embrace those issues. And how does he square that circle? He stays in the basement. I haven't heard a word of what he said. If you once in a while, he'll say something that we need more religious education for Muslims or something, but he doesn't say anything. And And the only way Trump is going to get him out of there and on there, when he gets out of the basement, he's actually speaking off the cuff, if that happens at all, because we've never seen a candidacy like this in the history of American politics. If he were to do that, you know what he's going to do.
He is Victor Davis Hanson, the Martin Illy Anderson Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution, author most recently of The Case for Trump. VDH, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Take care.
Grab a good seat and sharpen your pencils. Class is in session with Professor Dan Proft and the Dan Proft Show.